Sora Clark.
Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone to On Point, and over in Studio A, we have Mr. Ronald A. Edwards, and I'm your co-host, Don Allen. Mr. Edwards, how's it going today?
Fine, Mr. Allen. Kind of an overcast day here in the Twin Cities. At least the temperatures are approaching close to the 70s, something we've yet to see. What can I say? It's been an interesting spring. It's been a cold spring.
Yes.
Temperature is up to 86, though, in the Twin Cities, Mr. Allen, for our domestic and international. And, of course, I'm, you know, complaining and whining and et cetera, but, man, we could have been in the South. We could be along the Mississippi right now.
Yes.
Do you know that at some places the Mississippi is getting ready to crest, in some cases 20 feet over the flood level and breaking records as old as 80, 82, and 83 years old? Places like Natchez and Helena, Arkansas, and et cetera, it is unbelievable. Memphis, they may have a problem playing the basketball game in Memphis tonight between Memphis and Oklahoma City because the water from the Mississippi is starting to breach the dikes in downtown Memphis.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I know. I heard some reports about that.
Yeah, yeah. It's unbelievable. Right off the top, of course,
yep.
We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about a lot of our posturing. Osama bin Laden killed in an American raid on Navy SEALs. Group 6 goes in. And initially, Don, you and I were talking early Monday morning, and we were hearing stories that there had been fierce firefights. And, of course, you have military background. And, you
yes.
know, when people tell you of a fierce firefight, you're thinking in terms of the expending of hundreds and hundreds of rounds of ammunition and et cetera, and that it was a heavily guarded compound and that the U.S. Navy SEALs, actually the number was 79, they keep saying 25 and 26, I don't know why they say that, with four helicopters and et cetera, and that they were, you know, in almost hand-to-hand combat, right? Well, you know, about 36 hours afterwards, the two couriers were killed. Only one of them had a weapon. A woman was killed. She didn't have any weapon. And then Osama bin Laden is killed, and he didn't have any weapon. In fact, at one point, remember they were telling us that he was holding his wife or one of his wives in front of him as a coward. Come to find
yeah.
out, none of that happened. So
yeah.
it's been amazing in the last 6 days as we watch these, I'll use this phrase, Mr. Allen, readjustments.
Yes, a lot of readjustments.
In the story. But, you know, and we're going to be talking about that pretty quick here on Point, that is not unique just to the American government. We have a lot of readjustments going on here in the Twin Cities as the level of violence is increasing hourly.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, one other part on our international piece. You know, Don, we've been fighting in Afghanistan for 10 years, as you know. And each and every week and month and year, we're told we're just killing more and more of the Taliban. In fact, it's kind of like when they used to do the fight with the Viet Cong in Vietnam. I don't know where they're getting these Taliban from because we, according to us, I mean, you know, the American government, we probably killed a half a million Taliban, which gave them one of the largest armies in the world. And yet right now as we speak, elements of the Taliban are involved in fierce fighting out and inside of Kandahar, the second largest city in Afghanistan, and in fact have been attacking numerous government facilities and et cetera. And in closing, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, where are these people coming from, Don? You know
yeah.
what I'm saying?
10 years, we should have wiped them out by now, Mr. Edwards, don't you think? You know
that they should have been gone. I mean, you know, I mean, we've been killing the little brown people in Afghanistan for a decade. But I'm telling you right now, as we speak, we also have our shortwave radio on here in studio and the broadcast coming in from the Middle East. And they just in the last couple of hours were able to push the Taliban. And these are both Afghan and NATO forces, Don. NATO forces, French, British, Dutch, Czechoslovakian, French, and of course USA, and they had a heck of a time getting the Taliban out of Kandahar. So, you know, kind of the international scene, I just don't know what to expect, but what the heck. With Osama bin Laden dead, I think we can say with great comfort, Don, peace in our time, right?
Yeah, we're supposed to be able to say that, yes.
I mean, so that means the price of gasoline is going down. There'll be a lot of jobs for Americans, and particularly African Americans, and we'll see hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars, poured back into the American economy, right?
I would hope so. I hope that was the case. I know.
Why is it that you and I don't sound too enthusiastic on that?
I can't be enthusiastic. I was at the gas station this morning, and you know, I'm pretty tired of $80 a tank. You know.
Oh, yeah. And I have a little, you know, small economy car kind, you know, that an older African American, you know, should have coming out of the inner city. And hey, man, I'm not even filling it all the way up because my $20, $25, $50 a week.
And
Mr. Obama hasn't given me any increase on my Social Security for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, I really try to be a good patriotic American, understanding the policies of my nation. You know what I'm saying?
I understand.
But anyways, I know in the words of Neville's Chamberlain, 1937, getting on the airplane in Munich after giving away Czechoslovakia to the Nazis, that we have Don Allen, we have peace in our time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Don, what do we have? What do we got?
Well, this week, especially for our international, let me first say our call-in number, if you'd like to call in and have a conversation with us, is 877-572-4288. We're broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studios in beautiful downtown Minneapolis, overlooking Minneapolis City Hall, which remains empty today on Saturday, and it's probably no difference Monday through Friday. We have a lot going on this week, Mr. Everton, and we would have to start kind of where we lapped off last week with the shooting of the young black women here in North Minneapolis and South Minneapolis, and the mainstream media's responsibility to deliver news to the mainstream in real time, and the abandonment.
What did you say? What was the word you used again? Real time.
They have online website. They can put it up on real time. But then again, not only the mainstream media, but our local African American newspapers who have not whispered a hint about any of this this cluttered mess that's going on with these young women being shot dead and these young men being shot, and we don't find out till after. The general public doesn't find out until after the body parts are harvested and they're pronounced dead.
Absolutely.
So with that said, we have to, you know, look back here at last week and look at the shooting, the deadly shooting of Mr. Tamika Swoops.
Whose funeral was yesterday in South Minneapolis at the church of the Reverend Billy G. Russell at, I think it's Friendship Baptist Church. Yes.
Yes. And, you know, Mr. Edwards, this is something, you know, so many things cross the desk. I've gotten a call. I put a call into Ward 8 City Council person, Ms. Elizabeth Glitten, because I wanted to ask her the events or the turn of circumstances that almost penalized this young girl into receiving the $6,000 victim's burial assistance from the state.
Yes.
And our Councilmember Glidden did not return my call, but had her assistant Andrea Jenkins to return the call, who decided that she wanted to go on an intellectual.
Is Andrea she Councilmember Pro Tem or what? Oops, I'm sorry, I should.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I figure, you know, as dealing with Councilmember.
Oh, she deals with the colored issues in the
yes. You have colored folks, get in line. Andrea's over here. Everybody else, Councilmember Glidden has you.
And okay, so, if you're white. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
If you're white, yes, and. Councilmember Glidden wanted to relay through Andrea that she's doing what she can on behalf of Tamika Swoops. And I said, well, you know, that's not good enough. This is a young woman that was her 20th birthday was Thursday, Mr. Edwards. This is
the day before her funeral. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, day before her funeral. And I said, I saw some double standards there. We hate when this happens, a violence of any kind, but I saw a 12-year-old Hispanic girl You know, I read about it. I saw it on TV. She was shot in the neck, paralyzed from waist down. I saw a council.
No, neck down, neck down.
Neck down, sorry, neck
yep,
down.
And neck down. Mm-hmm.
I saw Council Member Glidden. I read Council Member Glidden, the mayor of the city, R.T. Ryback, Jeffrey Hayden, 61B. All these politicians rallied to her bedside, held fundraisers for her. And we have African-American women, men and women being shot down in Council Member Glidden's ward, and there's not a hint of anything. So Andrea, going back to her, she says, well, she went to the hospital. I says, yes. I says, but don't you think a well-worded letter to the state from Council Member Glidden could squash all the static that the Star and Tribune is trying to affiliate her with gang activity and let the money flow so they can get this young child in the ground, you know, so they can her family can bury her.
With dignity.
Mm-hmm. With dignity, yes. And so Andrea's conversation with me was, quote, well, that's a state thing, and Councilmember Glidden is a city person. I said, wait a minute. We're not talking about apples and oranges here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I said, if it's a politician, an elected politician, has pull enough to write a letter to anybody and get something done, if they're representing their ward on behalf of the citizens, on behalf of the state, whoever. Okay, this should have been done from the beginning. But you have, you know, agencies that aren't really doing what they need to do as far as this goes. So we have Terry, I hope Terry calls in from the Minneapolis Mirror because she was actually there at the funeral on yesterday and said that some nuns basically made the arrangements and had Miss Swoops buried. Had her funeral yesterday on Saturday.
So. Nuns? You're talking about members of the Catholic Church?
Yes.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes. And they said that the children were very angry. The adults there, you know, no one was talking to them. They were talking at them. And, I mean, Terry Izaguirre from the Minneapolis Mirror was just, she was beside herself yesterday, Mr. Edwards, in calling me and just discussing the turn of events that happened while she was at the funeral.
Yeah, this is after funeral. We're not even talking about those activities in the 5 or 6 days starting to a week ago today. Wow. Well, here's a couple things. And we are aware that, and for our listening audience, domestic, international, Mr. Allen and his news organization put out a very interesting email. I understand, Don, a lot of people aren't happy with you for putting out the information, but the information was factual. No one has said it wasn't factual, that the meeting and the discussions did not take place. But a week ago today at around noon, our time, Central Standard Time here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, V.J. Smith and Councilwoman Elizabeth Glidden hosted a very kind of closed meeting. In which I understand you published the names of many of the participants. And the purpose was to kind of get a lid on the pressure that was being applied towards the councilwoman's office. Now, I want our listening audience those that were not with us last week to remember that we announced at the top of the program last week that we had extended an invitation to Councilmember Elizabeth Glidden and to V.J. Smith of Mad Dads, one of the well-funded so-called street organizations in the sense of intervention and et cetera. Councilwoman Glidden, through Andrea, indicated that they had no interest and no time. Now, a week ago today, they had a meeting, and in the course of the meeting, the discussion came up about where this information was coming from that indicated that young Mrs. Swoops was a gang member. In fact, it almost led to an action being taken by the investigative agency. By the way, the investigative agency is a city agency called the Minneapolis Police Department, its Homicide Division.
Yes.
So I'm not understanding Andrea's statement to you, which was really a unnecessary statement that this is a state matter. It's not a state matter. It is a joint matter. It is a joint matter between the municipality and the state unit of government. And if there is a violation of any federal statutes, it's also a federal obligation. but the Minneapolis Police Department, who reports to the Minneapolis City Council, in which Ms. Glinton sits on, was investigating the case. And what came up last week was where this information was coming from, that the deceased, buried yesterday in a very emotional interment, if you will, was being identified as a member of a gang, if you will, and a gang member, and et cetera. What was not known to some of the participants at that meeting was that there were two people sitting at the table who, in fact, were the sources of providing incorrect and inaccurate information to the homicide unit of the Minneapolis Police Department that this young lady was a gang member, and it almost caused a forfeiture of the monies that she was entitled to, regrettably, as an outgrowth of her death, okay? Yes. And I'm greatly troubled because later on, Mad Dads, who in this meeting had initially indicated they were on top of this in the preparation for internment, in other words, burial and et cetera, right after that meeting ended on Saturday, Mr. Smith, B.J. Smith, of Mad Dads called a woman by the name of Helen Williams, who is a kind of an independent facilitator, tries to work with families, and she took on, or was told, she was kind of told, you know what I'm saying, that she needed to get on top of this. And I know all week long, we followed this closely at On Point, all week long there was this scrambling going on to raise the necessary monies to do what had to be done. In fact, it was not until, I'm pretty sure we're correct on this, it was not until Thursday that the body was released because there were some technicalities that the medical examiner here in Hennepin County, Dr. Baker, was insisting had to be met before the body could be released, and so there was a scrambling. So when you tell me, sir, that nuns from from the Catholic diocese were involved in having to do what needed to be done because, you know, it cost, unless you're going to embalm the body, it cost about $4,000 here to get a plot of ground. It cost another $6,000 to basically prepare you. So you're talking about at least $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm troubled by this because no one wants to take responsibility for providing false information, which the Star Tribune took and ran with it. You know, and the Star is not having a very good spring, if you will, and we'll be coming to that in just a couple minutes. But the Star Tribune went to great lengths through reliable sources available to us here at On Point. The Star Tribune went to put great pressure and went to great lengths to try to get the Minneapolis Police Department's homicide unit to say that Ms. Swopes was a gang member.
Yes.
Which they refused to do, to their credit. I mean, we here in this corner, in this studio, have been, you know, severe critics of the Minneapolis Police Department and et cetera, but we have to say what's right. And the homicide unit informed crime reporters for the Minneapolis Star Tribune that they would not participate in that kind of defamation, okay? And it appears that the state then authorized the release of the what is allowed by statute, as you said, $6,000 for the internment of the young lady at the conclusion of the services yesterday. I had hoped that folks would be at least courageous enough, Mr. Allen, to at least fess up to the roles that they played. As I said before, at last Saturday's meeting, there were two people at that table in that meeting at Mr. Smith's organization who, in fact, were the sources of the incorrect information to the Star Tribune.
Okay, we have a call, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, good.
It's Terry.
Okay, Terry, you're live on the air.
Franciscan funeralservices.com is the website where you could find the information of the people who, was basically the mortuary, where the hearse and taking care of the body and stuff.
Okay.
And I got a name one of the, she looked like a monk, like how monks look, a sister. And I'm going to give her a call and do a story on them because I guess, you know, they do help people in times of need. But I need to say yesterday, I have never, and I've been to many, many of these young people's funerals, I have never seen such respectful, what's the word I'm looking for?
Courteous?
Courteous.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Everyone in attendance was absolutely beyond their emotion, was traumatized.
Yeah.
I don't know the words to say. I'm just saying it was a very, you know,
respectful.
If anybody thought,
it was a very respectful and courteous service. Yeah, okay.
Right,
we got
and all the young, you know, not what some people might anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
What I did notice, though, was, and I do not care, I'm not holding my tongue anymore, these young people sit there, and this happened with, whose funeral was that? At Shiloh Temple, where they threw them all off the block.
And the police maced and beat young parishioners
right.
outside in the streets along Broadway.
Right, and I was there, too.
That.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched as Mad Dad shows up, and I need to be careful. The one thing I'm going to be careful here is I don't know that the family didn't reach out to Mad Dad's. And if they did, I don't want to put down, you know, that. But here's my thing. You have all these nonprofits out here collecting money, claiming to care about children. You have somebody at the vigil, because I also attended the vigil, did make one good comment I thought was very interesting, and that's churches used to play an anchor in the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't one priest, minister, or anybody who talked with these youths, and what's sad is I knew a lot of them. And so I stood with them, I talked with them. When one young man found out who my children were, and he was kind of feeling a lot of anxiety, I would say anger, you know, they don't know where to direct this. When he found out who I was, he gave me a hug. I gave him a hug back. He seemed to calm down. But nobody reaches out to these kids. And these young people, and when I say kids, I mean, you know, 21, 20, 19, 18, 17, these kids don't know where to direct their anger, their grief, because there's
or
nobody there for them.
Yeah, or their questions, right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, and I'm gonna say the names. I don't care if anybody gets mad. Reverend McAvee was there to give part of the eulogy. He shook hands, walked right into the church. You know, they're all there, but they just walk by.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched also the young people while people were, you know, the pastors and stuff were speaking, and the adults were getting it and screaming amen, but the kids were behind their tears, their minds, you can just see their minds going a mile a minute.
Okay.
And they weren't reacting.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my point I'm trying to say is with all these people being fed money to supposedly help these children, the school, we have a failure rate in our schools. We've got crime out in our streets. And this isn't just for African Americans. This is, you know, Somalis, Latinos, everybody. And we say our kids are our number one priority, but obviously they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other thing that's sad is that nobody from Elizabeth Glidden's office was there. This truly was a good girl.
I'm sorry. I have to ask you to repeat that because Mr. Allen and I were told, and we know that at the meeting last Saturday, which was a closed meeting, that there was great discussion and statements by Councilwoman Glidden that her office was fully engaged. Are you saying that there was not a representative or that the Councilwoman herself was not present at the funeral yesterday?
Absolutely. No, nobody was. Nobody. Nobody. It's like this young, you know, it breaks
but
my
wasn't
heart.
Wasn't the mayor there? Was his special deputy for colored affairs?
Sherman Patterson, you know, no. But you have to remember, this murder happened on the south side. You know, it's lights, cameras, and action on the north side. And
okay.
I went by to see if there was a memorial set up where the latest young man was killed last week. You know, because sometimes you know how they set up the memorials with the balloons and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the young man's Facebook, and somebody said that they had put something there for a memorial, but it was already gone. I drove by there this morning, and there's nothing there. So obviously, if people were placing something, somebody's picked it up and removed it.
Well, I have to say, because we are transparent here on point, and there was an attempt, but only three people showed up. The caller is talking about is another death, which me and myself and Mr. Allen will be dealing with a little bit later on in this program, which was actually kept secret almost. A young man has died after being gunned down along Dowling and Fremont. There was an attempt on Friday for a memorial service. What happened basically? All of the ecumenical and as well as those that have received significant funding for intervention and street ministry and et cetera said they were busy, didn't have time, were on their way out of town, et cetera, and so only three, because we sent a from my program, Black Focus, I sent a photography team. Only three individuals, and I know who they were. I will not divulge the name until someone comes in talking in terms of their role. There was only a individual who brought two other individuals with him in an attempt to call attention to the fact that this was the site of another death homicide here in the Twin Cities. And so there were a couple of placards left, and you're right. Police came by, picked it up, and tore them up and threw them in the garbage can and kept on going. The police did. So I have to say, in all fairness, that there was an attempt. But what happened was the ecumenical political factions did not have time on Friday to participate in that memorial service.
Mm-hmm. Not good.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. If we, and as I was saying, this young lady, Tamika Swoop, affectionately known by her friends as Jay,
mm-hmm.
was a good kid.
Mm-hmm.
And if we as a city, we can show, and I put up a nice article in remembrance of her, and I haven't even, I'm working on, you know, something else. But when we can fill a park for somebody who's sexually assaulted, or we can fill the streets for a biker, you know, why are we not filling the streets and showing compassion when a child, and something else people may not be aware of is that Tamika Swoop was in the same fifth grade as Taisha Edwards, who was
right.
killed back in 2002, and Tamika Swoop was lived just a few blocks away from Taisha Edwards. So like I say, nothing has changed. It's just a different day, a different year. And as much as people claim to care about children, I don't really think they value our youth's lives.
Right.
Because
okay,
if they
Terry,
did...
Okay, we appreciate it. We want to get a chance to open the phone lines, Mr. Allen, to let's see if we can get some folk to kind of help us and explain to us, because what Terry has laid out has
yeah.
to be disturbing,
yeah.
particularly in light of the amount of money that has been awarded and granted. I mean, everywhere I go, I hear people in these meetings in the mahogany boardrooms of the philanthropic corporations talking in terms of their street ministries, of their youth intervention programs, that they're on the streets at all hours of the night and et cetera, working with the youth and et cetera. And yet, you know, personally, I know that's not true. And,
no.
And a person such as Terry, who is a, let's say, a neutral observer, has been bringing some rather serious questions forward that,
yes,
I mean, I just kind of like to hear. I mean, last week we had the Reverend Jerry McPhee indicating they're trying to put something together. I just like to know if there's any progress going on. So, Terry, we appreciate it. We're going to open these phone lines and see what we get back in.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Mr. Allen, I think it's important then that we also make folks understand that the events which were chronicled in this morning's edition of the Johannesburg Times, known as the Minneapolis Star Tribune, people need to understand, because I got a couple calls early this morning.
Yes.
And these are from people who, you know, are well-educated, know how to read a newspaper, certainly feel that they do, who thought that the young man identified in the article this morning on the front page of the Metro section had been killed yesterday.
Yeah, and that happened because of the way of the first paragraph of the story.
Yes, sir. Poorly written, very poorly written.
Yeah, it says
intentionally poorly written. Intentionally, well, I can tell you that.
Yeah, and let me just read it to the listeners so they can get the same feeling for what you're talking about and why someone would call you and question this incident and when the date.
Mm-hmm.
An 18-year-old man shot earlier this week in North Minneapolis has died, and two 17-year-old boys have been arrested for the killing, police said Friday. Okay? That's the first.
Right. Now, what our listening audiences,
mm-hmm.
domestic and international, need to know, first of all, this young man was shot and was on Wednesday afternoon at about 4:45 in North Minneapolis along Dowling and Fremont. He was technically dead because what had happened, unfortunately, he was shot in the face. The bullet fragmented. And so that meant that anywhere from 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 additional pieces of the bullet and fragmenting had hit him in different places in his head and particularly his brain. When he was taken to the hospital, the doctors knew he was clinically dead. What happened, though, they put him on what I call the profit list, and that the profit list is to immediately begin to harvest his organs. Because he was technically a orphan, his mother had died in 2005. His father is nowhere to be found, according to the article. Other relatives did not step forward. The hospital, along with the National Registry that deals with organ placements and et cetera, immediately moved on him. Now, this young man bought to the hospital and et cetera about $350,000.
Yeah.
With respect to the harvesting of his organs and then those then being put on the registry and then being, quote-unquote, resold. Now, Mr. Allen and myself broke a similar story in the shooting death of a young man by the name of Johnson in the summer of last year along the 1200 block on Sheridan.
Yes.
And people wanted to pretend that we didn't know what we were talking about, and then we updated you on a young man who was shot and killed on North 6th Street. His organs were harvested. In fact, one of his organs was given to an individual was given to that person's brother, who is involved in activities in the community. But in the case of the young man identified in the paper this morning, about $350,000 were made off of his organs being harvested. He was dead as of 5:30 on Wednesday. Now, within 3 hours of that, Mr. Allen will he has it right there in front of him, and we're looking across studio. Two individuals were shot along the 1400 block on Queen, and for those that are not familiar with our city, that is approximately a block and a half from the police station, the 4th Precinct. Those two individuals were shot and wounded. Both of them are in poor condition. What the police say is life-threatening, except there was never any report. There was no report in the Star Tribune until this morning, and there was no TV and et cetera coverage. And this
None.
Is the way things are operating. Now, those were three individuals shot within 30 blocks of each other within 2.5 hours. There was never any news coverage.
Nothing. Nothing.
Give the number out again. Let's see anyone wants to question us or challenge us. Challenge us.
The number is 877. It's toll free, 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. Our phone lines are open, and we anxiously await comments, suggestions. And we did invite Mad Dad's VJ Smith to give us a call because we want to get the correct information, Mr. Edwards, out to the general public.
We really need to know the dynamics of the meeting last Saturday in which Mr. Allen and I, BNN, has identified and who the participants were in that meeting. We need to find out if anyone has attempted to examine how David Chinnan of the Star Tribune, Matt McKinney, Jim Walsh, Abby Simon were writing stories. They wrote three stories in the period from the shooting of Miss Swoops until the decision to take her off life support and et cetera. Who was providing to them the information that she was a gang member? Because what Mr. Allen and I are hearing, the Minneapolis Police Department's homicide unit is irrefutably indicating that at no point did they ever provide that information, but they were being pressured by certain political operatives to indicate that that was true, that she had gang affiliation. And that is extremely unacceptable and outrageous, Mr. Allen. And I would just have assumed that Councilwoman Glidden and my brother, V.J. Smith, would have been able to lay those rumors to rest because they all say they were with the family. They were counseling the family, if you will. Allegedly, in the meeting a week ago today, they said that they were helping to raise the necessary assets, if you will, to make sure that this child was buried, if you will, with dignity and integrity. Correct?
Correct. And we need to, you know, address a rumor also because, you know, I've alleged that Mad Dads, you know, get some type of funding. And it's gotten back to me that the leaders of Mad Dads says they don't get paid for this. And then
Mr. Allen, I've got to cut you off. I've got to cut you off on that because one of the things, now come on, gentlemen, one of the things that was discussed in the meeting last Saturday, if you will, there on 4th Avenue, you know, was as the meeting was beginning to wrap up and no decision was being made as it pertains to Ms. Swoops and her family, and Mr. Smith was getting ready to hand off to a woman by the name of Helen Williams, the conversation concluded about the need, this is a statement by Mr. Smith to Ms. Glidden, the need that they needed to meet because he had a funding proposal in to Mrs. Glidden's office.
I was kind of talking sideways there, Mr. Edwards, because not only that you know I'm aware of, but on the second hand, I know who his fiduciary agent was in North Minneapolis in 2009 to 2011. So you don't have a fiduciary agent unless you have money going through there. Okay?
Absolutely, Mr. Allen. Absolutely.
So you're not kidding me at all, and I know the numbers already. I just want them explained. So.
We both here and on point know the numbers, know the fiduciary agent, and know the conversation is going on. I mean, one of the things that I know is at play right now in St. Paul is that Mad Dads is being looked at to take over for the God Squad in St. Paul. There's a nice piece of change, if you will, that goes with that for street intervention, youth and gang intervention, and et cetera. Brother Spence has indicated that he's going to retire, speaking as if he is the CEO of a healthcare organization. But to tell you, sir, that there is no compensation, I mean, there is very lucrative compensation. Now, here's one of the other things I need clarification on. October of 2009, Shiloh International Ministries, that beautiful facility right there at the corner of Broadway, across from the New Crystal Palace, received about $245,000 for a reporting facility. That was most important, a reporting facility, and for street intervention workers, correct?
Correct, Mr. Edwards, correct. Absolutely.
And I understand that the federal government made a second funding grant available just a number of months ago. Why are these organizations not speaking up? Because just last fall, International Ministry, Shiloh International Ministries, hosted, along with Gary Cunningham and the Northwest Area Foundation, North Point. And we were allegedly, we got this report that actually was done in 2000 and was it five?
Yes.
Yeah, that came out 5 years later that told us what we already knew. I'm just wondering, see, when I hear Terry call in and talk in terms of what happened at the church yesterday of the Reverend Billy G. Russell, I'm puzzled because, you know, Mr. Allen, my associate here on this program, has compiled significant numbers, I mean, really millions of dollars, that are allegedly going to fight these problems. Now, one of the things that's so tragic in the story that Mr. Allen just read to you is that the young man, our most recent homicide victim here in Minneapolis that's officially been reported, was homeless.
Yes.
Yeah. He had just celebrated, you know, God forbid, a situation like that, his 18th birthday, but he was homeless. Now, I looked at a statement by a person in the article this morning talking terms we're working with, and I saw an on-air celebrity at KMOJ talking about how well they knew this individual and he was a good guy and et cetera, but no one has been able to say why they and did they reach out to try to help this young man.
Exactly.
Now, everybody knew about his predicament, but my sources have indicated to me over the last 5 days that no one did anything to help him. Now, I'm confused.
Yeah, that's really strange that would come out. I mean, the writer of that story, too, Paul Wash, and I mean, he knows who to contact. I mean, I understand, like, getting back to your point, Mr. Edwards, I don't know, the guy was homeless, so, I mean, what is he doing up at KMLJ in the first place, and how come they're not helping him? I mean, that's one of the many things that KMLJ should be doing.
Correct, absolutely.
In case, you know, based on the Center for Community
Communication Development. Mm-hmm.
Development.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so if the guy, they said they helped him move into his place, but it just sounds like a breakdown in services.
But you see, that's not true. See that, and I knew that this morning. He had no place. I don't want to, you know, the man is now deceased. I want him to depart with dignity and et cetera. He didn't have a place. Where he was staying was with a friend.
Okay.
He didn't have a place.
Oh, no.
He was homeless. He was homeless.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not good at all.
Just a couple weeks before, he was sleeping on a bus stop bench.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I saw that. The article was there. You look at it at the very end of the article. They're talking in terms of how they helped him and reached out. I mean, who helped him? You know,
yeah.
If they helped him get a place, what was the address?
Thank you.
Yeah. What was the address?
We have about a dozen people in the chat room.
I bet we do.
Yeah, and we have a bunch more people listening, and it just totally shocks me that no one has an opinion or can pick up a phone and dial 877-572-4288 and let their voice be heard. Okay? These are serious issues we're talking about.
Well, you know, Miss Wolf says, you know, and God bless her, and his hand is upon her shoulder. She has been laid to rest, and apparently there were some courageous efforts by the Catholic Archdiocese, and apparently the woman known as Helen Williams was very much involved in desperately trying to put something together. We now have a young man who there's clearly no assets for him. Will he be put to rest with dignity? As I said in response to Terry, I'm aware that there was an attempt to call attention to his death.
Yes.
And this was at about the same time that he was being pulled, unplugged. And only three individuals could be rounded up to go up and to let the public and the community and this city know that another young person had lost their life. And he was not involved in a crime or criminal activity. He was walking out the door of that school. That's, by the way, what's in the police report. And his assailants walked up on him and shot him point blank in the face. Now, the fact of the matter is, in this case, my prediction is that the county itself and the state, at least Andrea was correct on, you know, she just had the wrong person. The state will have to, by law, provide for and pay for his internment, if you will, because this individual is truly without any assets to be properly interned with dignity and et cetera. But, hey, man, you know, what we have to understand up here is, and Terry kind of asked the question, I just didn't say anything at that time, the reason that these things are happening, hey, if you're black, you got no rights. You don't have any rights, man. You know, there's no expectation that you should be treated with dignity. And then we're always out here telling these young people how they must act in a dignified manner. She said something very interesting, Mr. Allen, and that is that these young people are thinking a little bit better than maybe what we're giving them credit for.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And, see, I still remember her call to us last summer as they had just beaten young black men and women, teenagers, children, et cetera, in the streets along Broadway in front of Shiloh after Shiloh forced them out of the church onto the streets, and then the police began to beat them and mace them. There was silence in the community then. People, in fact, spent most of their time talking in terms we shouldn't have been bringing that kind of information forward. Remember that?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was, mm-hmm. remember yeah. it like so, it was yesterday.
Yeah. So, anyways, anything else? What do we have? Because apparently, you know, folks are comfortable that these things are happening, and so until they become the victim.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that, you know, you're going to have to look at a little bit closer, because I think, you know, we had talked about this earlier, Mr. Edwards. I think that the police department, along with the mainstream media, is Channel 4 and the Star Tribune specifically, is putting a quash on this information getting out to the public. I mean,
absolutely. We
had not been where we were at the right time and right place, we wouldn't have found out until we read about the guy dying in the newspaper.
That's right. That's correct.
But unfortunately, you know, we have to address not only the white mainstream media, the police department, and the television station, but we also have to address the Minneapolis Urban League and other places that have these missions. A few minutes ago, you talked about the amount of money. There is millions, as you know already, and to our listeners, there is millions and millions of dollars going into these particular nonprofits, especially in North Minneapolis and some in South, the black nonprofits that say they address youth violence and youth in general and education. And we were tricked into believing last year in 2010, in June, I think it was, that one agency in North Minneapolis that was the Peace Foundation, ran by Don Samuels, City Councilman Samuel's wife, Sandra Samuels, was on the verge of just squashing crime in North Minneapolis. Because in 2009, the Star Tribune praised them for, you know, the crime rate, the murder, homicide rate is so low because of all the work that this Peace Foundation did. And then in 2010, you know, it just went through the roof again. And so they politely backed out and decided that they were to change the focus and add a new name, the Northside Achievement Zone, or NAS. And they were to focus on education. But here's what they did. As their inept attempt to address violence, they transferred that same inept process to addressing education and formed a bunch of pilot schools and left North High School out of their group of pilot schools.
For transparency and clarity to our domestic international, we must report on the story, copyrighted story by Corey Mitchell, education writer for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Johannesburg Times, the most recent declaration about the future of North High School. Could you, Mr. Allen?
Let me
move it quickly. Corey Mitchell, writing in the Minneapolis Star Johannesburg Times, reported that North High School will cease to exist as of the end of this 2011 school year. There will be no freshman class at North High School for the 2011-2012 year, which means that North High School will then close its doors. And by the way, in our city here, Minneapolis North is the oldest existing high school in the city of Minneapolis, having come into being in the 1880s. Now, this comes at a time when Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, who will be getting her doctor's degree in a couple of days, indicated that if the community could come up with 125 students for the freshman class coming in 2011-2012, that she would allow the school to come in. Lo and behold, after spending thousands of dollars of the out of the alumni fund, they were only able to come in with, what was the number, 52?
52.
Yes. So Corey Mitchell in the Star Tribune wrote, to kind of with a smirk, that North Minneapolis is North High School, the oldest high school in the city, will be ceasing operations as of June 2nd, 2011.
Exactly. That was it.
Okay. All right, then. Well, anything else? I cut you off. I'm sorry, Don, I cut you off. We were taking a look at some of the numbers in the area of street ministry, street intervention, crime intervention, and et cetera.
Yeah, well, not only the numbers, Mr. Edwards, the processes that some of these people are taking. Because, you know, remember last year I went over actually to Shiloh and talked with some of the people from the gang intervention program. They don't call it gang intervention. They call it something totally strange. And so,
okay.
And I could just misses me right now. And I asked him, I says, you know, can you identify where the gangs are?
Yeah.
Do you know what they need? I mean, what's going on? Can if I pull out a map, can you kind of give me
the pinpoint, right.
Pinpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, but, you know, some of the young men have come giving their life to Christ. I said, well, that's great, you know, but the county has given you a billable mission. And in some cases, you know, I'm going to confirm something Monday, Mr. Edwards, because they were telling me that, okay, it's based on people that we serve that they could bill for that $245,000.
That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm.
But now I'm finding out that it is a 12-month divided check that goes right to them. Okay? So
right.
They don't serve anybody. They still get a check, from what I'm understanding.
Check for about $172,500.
Yes.
Right. Oh, is that right? Because we asked the question last summer here on On Point about those numbers and that protocol. And we were told, in fact, you know, we were told by the county and also by the youth coordinating board. You remember, we all should remember the youth coordinating board because they're talking about how they're coordinating programs to keep young people safe on the streets. And nobody wanted to deal with the numbers. You know, it's kind of like what caused the collapse of City Inc. With respect to, they kept coming in with these so-called numbers of success and et cetera. Of course, it would always come just after two or three African-Americans or others had been killed on the streets of our city. And no one could ever, you know, because one of the things we've learned over the years is that certification and the authenticating of numbers are really important. And nobody would take the responsibility to certify the numbers, but as we said earlier when Terry was on, that in the mahogany boardrooms of the Minneapolis Foundation, General Mills, Northwest Area Foundation, Bremer Foundation, McKnight, and others, our leaders sit and with great pontification talk in terms of the successful job that they're doing here on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I assume that's from the hours of 9 to 4, you know, and 9 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. Because, I, as we said a number of times last year, I just don't know who's on the streets at between 10 and 5, 4 and 5, 6 in the morning, you know, when we have a lot of things going on. And so, but we had asked about those numbers because those numbers are so important because they give a significant cushion, if you will, to your nonprofit operation, correct?
Yes, you're absolutely correct.
Yes. And so, you know, by the way, what was it, just a couple months ago, we were doing Operation Ceasefire, and then we were doing Operation Safe Streets. People, delegations were going to Chicago. They were going to Boston, if you will. They were going to Baltimore, if you will. Washington, D.C., delegations were going out there, and statements were being made by city officials that tremendous amounts of monies were coming in. We were going to bring order. And by the way, on that particular note, the latest statistics, I mean the real statistics, the most dangerous physical area in the city of Minneapolis right now, Mr. Allen, is the warehouse district on the western edge of downtown Minneapolis. Yeah, play it again.
We got to do it again.
Yes, sir. Yes. That is the most dangerous area. In fact, what they've done in front of Karma is they've set up these big floodlights, and they're using the floodlights to accent the front of Karma, et cetera, like that's going to stop somebody from doing something.
Yeah.
Because the most recent event in there was a woman stabbing another woman. That happened on the dance floor inside the club. I don't know how the lights would have helped.
Yeah, exactly. I read about that also, and then just strange,
yeah.
But you know, I was down there and I was talking to the guy that runs the parking lot right next to the Fine Line and Elixir there. They
right.
have a lot of African Americans on Friday night down there at Elixir, and as a friend of mine would say, selling the white man's liquor. And so they said that it was just the stuff we hear about, Mr. Edwards, is not even 0.1%. This guy at the parking lot says when the clubs end, it's not just African-American folks or black folks, whichever you prefer, natives, white folks, just busting.
Hispanics, Asians, yes, correct.
And cutting and acting crazy, and then, you know, you don't hear about that because, you know, the police officers are over there macing the black folks, you know, when they walk by. I covered that a couple days ago. Because I felt, from what I heard and what people were reporting back to me, that, you know, these are a danger warning, unsupervised police. Because, Mr. Edwards, I know someone that I used to work with, and she doesn't mind. Her name is Elizabeth Kay. She's a 23-year-old white woman who told me. She says, my boyfriend, who is black, was a little tipsy. We stopped on the corner of 5th and Hennepin so he could lean up against the building, which would be the Lumber Exchange building.
Mm-hmm.
And we were asked to keep moving by the police. My boyfriend shouted, respectfully, can you give us just a minute? And she says almost immediately they were both pepper sprayed by a Minneapolis police officer. And that's why she says she never go downtown anymore. She just doesn't go downtown. Another person wrote me and says, she's an eyewitness who saw police treat an injured person, victim, just like with no respect. The police treated the victim like a criminal. They put handcuffs on him while he was writhing in pain. When the other eyewitness loudly voiced that the police should hurry up and get the victim into the ambulance and on his way to the hospital, the police pepper sprayed the eyewitness. And
yes, just, that's right.
How disgusting is that? I hope this wasn't the officer of the year that pulled that bonehead move. And
it was. She's talking about Officer Aldridge.
Yes.
Archer. Officer Archer. Archer is well known to us. In fact, we prepared a specific report with respect to him and others. To the Department of Justice, political decisions were made to protect by the Obama administration to protect R.T. Ryback. Officer Archer has the, though it's a white truck, we from the old days called it the Black Mariah, because the purpose of the truck is to whip you and then throw you in the truck and then take you down. The only problem is Sheriff Richard Stanek has a policy, and his deputies are ordered to strictly enforce it. They will not take you into the Hennepin County Jail here in Minneapolis if you are beaten and bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're taken over to HCMC, and that's a trip, if you will. But what they do after they beat you and taser you and pepper spray you, they put you in Officer Archer's truck, and then they drive you around, maybe for 3 or 4 hours, okay? Let's say that you get whipped around 1:30. We'll keep you in the truck, and then we may take you down. And see, a lot of times what will happen, we'll release you,
mm-hmm.
put you back out on the street, okay? And you basically got no money. You look real, real tough, if you will. When I say tough, you know, you're beaten and bruising, et cetera. Now, whoever the person was that just texted you with respect to the truck, I assume they did not know that it was Officer Archer and his special unit, if you will. Now, Officer Archer used to come to the PCRC meetings and used to whisper to some of his white colleagues how he'd like to take some of our black behinds and catch us at night and whip us until we were bloody. I mean, this is, Tim Dolan applauded that and thought that was a good idea. Only problem is that, you know, we were a little bit more keener on what was going on. But that is that's called the Archer Mariah.
Okay.
Whoever that person was, that is Jim Archer. And he was Officer of the Year He was just last year, he's also the year, for his ability to beat the crap out of African Americans and others of color. Now, let me tell you how bad things are. Last night at Pizza Lucci's, which is right there across down the street from the parking lot that you were talking about in the Fine Line, there was a confrontation in which a this is, it is, it's funny, and it's kind of the levity we need to share here on Point. A white, young white man who was a rapper, you know, trying to be the black thing. He was rapping and talking stuff. He was in line. And there is an individual there at Pizza Lucci's who, big man, I mean, monster-sized individual, about six, they call him Butch, a Caucasian, about 6'4", about 340, 350 pounds. He rides herd on the Negroes and talk to them like they got tails. But anyways, Butch told the white individual last night to shut his damn mouth, and the white boy took exception, and Butch got up and pushed him. Well, this cat happened to have some karate ability and kicked him in the groin, you know where, right?
Yeah.
Not, almost knocked him out, and then the white boy took off. Now, one of the persons that was in pursuit of him was Ann Martin, Inspector Mike Martin's wife, who she is a sergeant, but she's the one who holds the contract for our Pizza Lucci's, and they were the two involved in the setting up and the ultimate sending to prison of Officer Mike Roberts, did him real dirty. But, yeah, everybody's talking about it because they said, man, when this cat delivered the kick, he kicked him right in the groin, Don. Said, you saw this 6'4", 350 pounds hit the ground. You understand, you thought it was a piano falling off the 10th floor. And by the way, that Pizza Lucci's, every Friday, Saturday, and sometimes on Sunday, but definitely every Friday and Saturday, there are 8 or 9 or 10 confrontations, particularly as the weather grows nicer and et cetera. It is unbelievable down there. But the incident reports, because of the presence of Ann Martin, who holds the contract, the wife of Inspector Mike Martin of the 4th Precinct, Caucasians, what happens is that at the end of the night, all those incident reports, that's what they're called, are suppressed, and they're purged. And so consequently, Sergeant Palmer and Sergeant McCarty, an African-American who is now the public relations officer, are able to run out and say, crime is down in the warehouse district by 7%. That's how it works in our town, Don.
Yeah, it certainly does. I remember they were celebrating Downtown 100. Talking about they got the 100 most chronic offenders downtown. They had a big hoopla, had the media out, had stories in every channel, every newspaper.
Yes, sir.
Saying, wait a minute. Wait, you got people stabbing each other, shooting each other? I mean, what is this? And yet, Mr. Edwards, you know this already, but this is just a positioning piece for funding.
Certainly.
Done by the city. Well, just make it look good on paper. Maybe we'll get the Democratic convention here in 2012.
Oh, not this time. Remember, we told the story. We already broke the story. Now, Minneapolis lost the Democratic convention for 2012 because they did a number on St. Louis, and somebody pulled St. Louis's code, and St. Louis gave Charlotte and the black mayor of Charlotte some real heavy information about police brutality here in Minneapolis. And the Democratic National Committee, Selection Committee, said, no, we think we'll go to Charlotte.
Yeah.
Now, there won't be no Democratic convention here anytime soon.
And
maybe the Republicans can come back. You know what I mean?
That'd be nice, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I just think there's too much. There has to be some focus on solving some of these issues. And, I mean, the way I see it, Mr. Rosen, and I mean, some people are indifferent with my options and my views, but or our views here on Point, but, you know, this is a, to me, this is a simple fix. What happened was there used to be people on the street, but now it's a part of political positioning rather than actually solving the problem, okay? If you don't like Mayor R.T. Ryback, the city council, and the DFL political plantation, you're exercised, okay? And then they go to people that are friendly. They'll go to Bishop Howe and Shiloh International Ministry.
Bill Davis and others. Right.
They'll go to B.J. Smith and Mad Dad because they're the buddies. And you have, you know, Sherman Patterson down there, the mayor's public policy aide, carrying water for these people. You know, oh, these are good folks in the black community. These are good. You don't know how many business calls I go on where the person will ask me, do you know Sherman Patterson?
Yes.
Will ask me, I says, why? Mm-hmm. Oh, he's done a lot with us. He introduces us to the, you know, it introduces you to who? I says, you can be at that level or here. You can read Mr. Edwards' blog. You read my blog and find out what's going on. I says, mm-hmm. This is political positioning. Of course, you work for the city. You want anybody that you – it's like you do your resume. If you had a bad job in the past, you're not going to put that on the resume for a new employer to possibly call and let this bad job person tell, oh, he was terrible or she was terrible. No, you're going to bypass that. You're going to go to all the people that are friendly and want to work with you, and that just very like-minded. So
the word is that they use down in city council is who you feel comfortable with.
Yes,
comfortable with, you know, and you know the word is that there are different people. Now I have to say this to our friend BJ, is that Sherman, who carries a lot of property and a lot of water for BJ. There was a conversation took place on an elevator. Sherman knows what I'm talking about. Just a couple weeks ago, I got on. Sherman wasn't paying any attention to who all the people were on the elevator, and they had just come out of a meeting. They were talking in terms of Mad Dads and BJ and positioning them. Now, this is consistent with the conversation last Saturday when BJ basically told Elizabeth Glidden that they needed to meet in the next couple of days because of the proposal and the funding that he expected to be forthcoming through her office, if you will. I mean, so. And so what happens is that Tim Dolan, the chief of the Minneapolis Police Department, who just goes through the motions, he just comes in, reads the paper, and goes on about his business. Janae and others are running the department. And the mayor, you know, they're telling the downtown council the same thing that you just articulated. What's happened, they're basically saying that BJ is the man on top of the problems and the issues on the street. That's why it was so surprising at the end of the meeting last Saturday that my good brother made the call to Ellen Williams and told her she needed to get on top of the arrangements for young Mrs. Swoops and take care of that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But around City Hall, they were saying that VJ was on top of that, and Elizabeth Glidden was saying that she had a hands-on. That's why I was so shocked. I mean, I'm just hoping that Terry was incorrect and Elizabeth was there somewhere in the front row with the dignitaries, because based on what Andrea stated to you, I'm not understanding how the councilwoman, after profiling herself as being on top of this and being very concerned and sympathetic to the family of the deceased, that she did not at least make her presence, because most politicians are smart enough to at least show up at the funeral.
Yes.
Okay. And you know, it's kind of startling, you know what I mean? And by the way, let us say this here at On Point. Elizabeth, irrespective of what you may be feeling about us as black bloggers, we still leave the door open for you to call in. And let's talk, let the world hear you. You know, I mean, Elizabeth is a lawyer, in fact she's a civil rights lawyer.
That's
she's a city council member. And we here at On Point welcome her call and welcome a dialogue.
That's Elizabeth Glidden. I forgot the part about her being a civil rights lawyer.
Lawyer, that's right. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted her to call in because, you know, Mr. Edwards, besides all the stuff that's been going on, I wanted her to explain why there is no word back on all the civil rights cases that they've shredded. Because, you know, if I told you this before, Mr. Evans, Cam Gordon, Councilman Cam Gordon, Cameron Gordon, said that he would look into it. And
yes,
then,
he did. Now, Mr. Allen, just for, you know, he told me that on the 30th of March in the town hall meeting with Governor Mark Dayton. He was a little more clever with me. He asked me had I gotten any kind of feedback or challenge about the stories that I have written in my column and on my television program. And I looked at him and I said, no, I haven't. You know, and are you doing anything? Has the council made any inquiry? Have you called Velma Corbell in? Oh, by the way, Velma Corbell, we mustn't let this go down. We still have a lot of time. Velma Corbell accepted $10,000 from the St. Paul Foundation the other night at the Crown Plaza.
Yes.
Put it right in her pocket, and that's a violation of the ethical conduct laws of the city of Minneapolis. She got the money for her efforts and success in the area of civil and human rights, and she gets a salary of about $104,000 a year. And the statutes or the ordinances of the city of Minneapolis say that that money was supposed to go right into the general fund, and she put it right in her pocket.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, they gave her that money for her for fighting racism. You know, to me, that's like, you know, Velma Corbell fighting racism is saying, like, President Obama supports the Republican Party platform.
Absolutely.
It just doesn't make sense. It's like taking a handful of baby crap and throwing it in the wind and it's blowing back on you.
Yeah.
It's wrong. It's just dead wrong. And she needs to explain herself a little bit better, you know, and what's going on with that, because it didn't make any sense. How can you accept somebody? And a lot of people, Ms. Evers, told me, too, that the St. Paul Foundation is just not in touch with any reality, okay? Just like the Northwest Area Foundation.
Give Velma Corbell $10,000 cash the other night at the Crown Plaza in downtown for her outstanding efforts, and I assume the word success should be a part of that, in preserving civil and human rights and et cetera, in light of what they did with all those case files and the lies they told and the non-investigations and the shredding, and the fact that there are legitimate and relevant news entities, though we may not be the white media, who have documented, irrefutably documented, the cases that were shredded, the lies that were told, the letters that were sent out to people telling them that their cases had been investigated and there was no probable cause, but they had been investigated when, in fact, that never happened. And Cam Gordon and the rest of them down there on the city council, too scared, if you will, to bring her in and to bring her before a committee of inquiry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. But see, that's why, Don, you know, that's why the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Johannesburg Times, could be so comfortable this week in for 3 days. Ignoring the gunning down of three African Americans in two separate incidents, one of those who has now died, article in this morning's paper. That's why the Star Tribune has that level of cockiness, if you will, and disdain for the African American community, and by extension, for their own readers.
Yes.
Because they said, look, we can get away with anything with these people, okay? We are the original Barnum and Bailey, if you will. We can sell this black community to Brooklyn Bridge before there was a Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? And so they're comfortable with this, man. The mayor is comfortable with it. Velma Corbell is comfortable with it. The city council is comfortable with it. White corporate Minneapolis is comfortable with it, okay? The only people that aren't comfortable with it are the victims, and that's us in our community.
Yes.
But we can't get anybody to stand up, you know? And our, you know, folks are dying and being beaten all over the place. And, you know, let me just say again, Don, to our international and domestic audience, folks don't even have a clue how many beatings and assaults and in some cases murders that are taking place that are not even being reported anymore.
Exactly.
In this town. Not even being reported. And the majority of the time the victims are people of color, and the largest percentage within that are blacks. Okay? And all they have to do is bring out the public information officer from the police department and Sherman Patterson from the mayor's office and say, hey, crime is down, we got everything under control. Then why do you, on the occasions that they do let the body be found, why are we going to all these funerals?
Yep, exactly.
And the reason is, Don, I didn't ask it as a rhetorical. I asked it because the answer is, because it's just black folk. And as Justice Taney said, there are no rights that the Negro has that white folks are honor-bound, duty-bound, morally, politically, and otherwise to respect. And that's what's happening, my brother.
That's your
in Minneapolis and the Twin Cities.
The new Jim Crow.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
yes sir.
Exactly.
Yes, sir. Only thing ain't a black bird, he's a white bird. Oops.
Yep. Exactly. And last week, I'd like to direct people also to check out Professor Nakima Levy-Pounds wrote an article titled Calling It As I See It, Why the Use of the Term Achievement Gap Makes a Bad Situation Worse. And you can read that on the Independent Business News Network. That's a really great article. It's on the front page, and you'll enjoy that quite a bit.
Don, for those that haven't access to Jed, what was her hypothesis, if you will, with respect to that?
What I'm understanding and what I'm comprehending is that we're using these catchwords, like when we went from black to African American, and then someone back to black, some stay with political.
Yes, okay.
You know, and the term achievement gap is just, for example, a child who has attended school in a wealthy suburb area typically receives advantage to what a poor child would not originally be privy. The child in the wealthier community would likely gain access to more highly qualified teachers, new textbooks, access to the latest technologies, smaller class sizes, privately financed extracurriculars, and inside knowledge of the unwritten customs and rules of the mainstream society. Now, meanwhile, and this is directly from Dr. Pons, meanwhile, a poor child of color is forced to contend with less qualified teachers, used or even no textbooks, lower teacher expectations, overcrowded classrooms, and a lack of racial diversity and cultural competence amongst teachers. Further, the recent report titled Double Jeopardy, How Third Grade Reading Skills and Poverty Influence High School Graduation, a report done by Annie E. Casey Foundation, establishes that children whose families live in poverty often lack resources for decent housing, food, clothing, books, and they often do not have access to high-quality child care and early education. So,
now, Mr. Allen, let me just say on that so that people understand, because that's another thing that is happening in our society, is that the history of the African-American is being either diluted or made to disappear. Those words, and that the reason I use the word the hypothesis, if you will, rationale, logic, and et cetera, those words, Mr. Allen, and I would encourage our listening audience to go back into the archives and look at the arguments presented to the United States Supreme Court in the matter of Brown versus Topeka, because that is exactly the argument and rationale that the legendary, later to be Justice of the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall, and his associates made in Brown versus Topeka. The only difference is that they were talking about in its totality the denial of those opportunities, et cetera, were the sons and daughters of the Negro, in other words, Negro children. The addition, the caveat that emerged in what you just read to us is that we are able to talk now a little bit, because of Brown versus Topeka, we are able to talk a little bit about the fact that there are some who have been able to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, got the 40 acres and a mule, if you know what I mean, and are able to find themselves positioned in communities of affluence. And it's more difficult to cut them out of the process because they are sitting in the classroom, in the chemistry lab, and et cetera, something that Dr. Childs touched on a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying to you, my friend, that that particular doctrine and what was read, with the exception of in the case of Brown versus Topeka, Thurgood Marshall making that argument before the United States Supreme Court and Chief Justice Earl Warren, that is exactly the same language and philosophy.
Okay.
And that was over 50 years ago.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, Mr. Edwards, if the children in the poor neighborhood had the same things that the suburban or the richer. Well, let me just, I'm kind of beating myself up here, but I mean, I think things would be a lot different, because in the neighborhood it wouldn't be poor. I mean, that the different levels of what's going on in the community, from the unemployment, lack of economic development, all that would be have to be flip-flopped. And in the current DFL political plantation, as I call it, mm-hmm. they don't want to fix the systemic problems from the bottom up, like the violence, the gang. You know, if you're gonna address,
absolutely, Mr. Allen,
if you're gonna address
mm-hmm.
the gang violence and the economic flows, you have to give these kids something to do. Okay, you can't let them run the streets wild, because my mom was telling me. Idle mind is the devil's playground, or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's the appropriate saying. Mm-hmm.
And then she used to say, if you're lost in the playground of your mind, you're in a bad neighborhood. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at this, and the children, they don't. You can go after them. You know, Ryback. I'm waiting for this, Mr. Edwards, any minute. R.T. Ryback and his group of hoodlums are going to have a press conference and talk about up stepping the police patrolling. and aggressively going after these suspected gang members, okay, which is going to tag every black youth 12 to 18 years old as a possible or alleged gang member, okay?
Yes, sir.
And
yes, sir.
So doing that is the wrong thing to do. Number one, they need to, they got the money. They need to cut Shiloh International Ministries money off, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There are several other hubs in North Minneapolis that do a very good job of outreach into the family unit, not just people coming in. I mean, Hennepin County just gave almost $250,000 to an agency that hasn't paid its staff in 4 or 5 months here to do outreach, to be a referral.
I understand that that staff, is, that entity is the Stair Step Foundation under the leadership of Alfred Babington Johnson. I was shocked when I heard that he was not paying his staff.
Yeah. And so if you're supposed to be an agency that goes out and you know, refers people, you know, I would, this one, I never believed this would work, Mr. Edwards, but this one agency who I was kind of critical on, and I'll leave them nameless because they're doing okay, but
okay.
They called me up and said, would you come here and just spend a day with us right after the first? That's when we're really busy. I said, for what? She goes, we want to show you what we do, why we justify getting the money that we get, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I went up there, Mr. Edwards, at 8 o'clock in the morning with my cup of coffee, sat in there. They had 30 people, black people, men and women, come through there in the first hour. Some of the needs were, I have, you know, I got a job interview, okay? I don't have any money to get on the bus. And do it right.
I can believe it. Mm-hmm.
Okay, the sister. Well, me and my kids, my baby needs diapers. We haven't eaten in 2 or 3 days. Just the kids have eaten, but the mother hasn't eaten. And I'm like, and they're buying potato chips, them little with all the MSG, and that's what the kids are eating for meals.
Right.
And so this lady and this guy was able to say, okay, let's fix the immediate. They have their shelter is stable, but they don't have any food. Okay, got in their vehicles, took them over to the food bank, loaded the car up with enough food for ground beef, chicken, pizzas, vegetables, even treats for the kids, popsicles and stuff like that, and loaded the car up, brought it to their house. Okay, that was settled. Now, before they got out of the car, they says, "Why don't you come back to us in 3 days and give us a report on how you're doing?"
Right.
Which didn't just cut them off. So this agency actually addressed the whole family. There's a brother there, really wants to work downtown at Foot Locker, okay? Needs a pair of black pants, you know, doesn't have a nickel. He actually got hired for the job. Doesn't have any black pants. And he says, I need a pair of black pants. I want two pairs so I can wear, you know, and then wash a pair, wear a pair, and some shirts and some, you know, just to go down there to this job. And that was nothing. They were able to pick up the phone, call over to this agency that a store actually and says, hey, will you be willing to donate a couple pair of pants, you know, 34, 32 to this young? No problem. Done. They had a great relationship. And there was various needs in the community. But one thing, Mr. Edwards, I found out is that out of the 30 or so people that were there, 5 of them voted in the last election in 2000.
Well, there you go. There you go.
5 of them.
There you go.
So I had to go back to the piece on Impact Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is Impact Minnesota really reaching to? If you're missing these people, because, you know, in Minneapolis, poverty is a distraction. That's purposely set up by the DFL political plantation.
Absolutely.
Okay, so if you're thinking of, okay, I'm not going to have dinner tonight and President Obama is running for president and I have to find me some food or vote, you know, the food's going to win every time. Okay?
That's right.
And so I was shocked. I was thrown back, and this agency just made me a believer. This particular agency made me a believer in what they do. They have computer labs there. They have more people in there than the University of Minnesota UROC does in North Minneapolis. Okay?
Oh, my. Okay.
And I mean, I was watching and seeing what was going on, and I was like, I applauded them. They are actually doing the correct work, and my heart goes out to the people in that area in North Minneapolis, and I don't know what we can do as a community or as certain particular individuals to
well, change. Here's one of the things I hear. I understand that they're trying to put together a legislative day over at the state capitol to come together to articulate, highlight, spotlight some of the problems facing communities of color. And certainly I wish them success. But the reason I drew into that is that after Mr. Allen, my associate here, brought it to our attention, some things that he saw at three McDonald's locations, young African-Americans, the very folks that we're all quick to criticize and et cetera, coming in, filling out applications, and we deep down know that it's not going to happen. I shared with Mr. Allen an observation I made at a submarine shop in a northern suburb, which does not hire blacks, but they have a large number of Hispanics, which is interesting. They've never hired blacks there, but I saw two young African-American young ladies, probably about 16, the minimal age, come in. They were very polite, very well-dressed, if you will, you know, came in, asked for applications. I listened to a little bit of their conversation because they filled them out right there at the table. And I knew deep in my heart, and I said this to my associate, Mr. Allen, I knew deep in my heart that these young ladies are not going to get a job. Mr. Allen has posted, and Don, like for you in the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have or less, but Mr. Allen has posted a report which confirms what we've been saying here at on Point, if you will, and that is that by and large, young African Americans cannot look forward, again, cannot look forward to being hired this summer, Mr. Allen, correct?
You're absolutely correct. I was at that McDonald's. I'm actually going to go to the link and post it online right now so people can see this, because I was in the McDonald's in the Camden area, and there was actually, then it was 60 youth, mm-hmm. but I guess a total of 120 applied for that job for 16 jobs at the McDonald's. And if you go in there, you'll see that nothing but the Hispanic and Latino brothers and sisters are in there working. And I'm saying,
right.
Well, what happened to, you know, like we talked about that last week and the week before, I think, Mr. Edwards, is like when I was in high school, when I was 14 years old, I worked from 14 through 18 all while I was going to school. The only
mm-hmm.
requirement for me was to go to school
mm-hmm.
and you could have a job here in Twin Cities. I worked at every fast food restaurant on Lake Street, on Nicollet, you know, the Burger King, the White Castle, the McDonald's, the Embers, the Archer Treacher's Fish and Chips, and jobs were plentiful. If you wanted to go out and get a job.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of tired of people telling, saying that that these kids don't want to flip burgers. Because that's a lie, okay? These kids want to do something, okay? You can't come to me and tell me that black kids have gotten so sophisticated that they say, we don't want to flip burgers. We won't want to do that. There might be a small percentage, but that's not the case. If they're disinterested.
And it's clearly not the case when you see them come in and apply for a job. They're bright enough to understand what that job consists of and what it requires, and they clearly have come that. It's part of the argument we saw during the immigration debate, where folks very cleverly talked in terms that these folks, the Hispanics and others, are working jobs that others don't work. I really don't know anybody in my community that will not work any kind of job, including going to the sewage plant and getting down in the muck. If it pays a fairly decent salary, if you will,
yes. Yeah.
But I'm just saying that I'm saddened by what I'm seeing. I'm watching it. I've been specifically going out, monitoring many of the fast food places and et cetera. And I, with the exception of Dairy Queen,
mm-hmm.
who seems to have a policy of balance, I'm just saddened. I'm not shocked or et cetera because I've seen too much racism, but I am saddened by the fact that I see these young, bright-eyed African-American youth, 16, 17, 18, even 15, I mean, want to work, want to do the right thing, okay? And I know that they are not going to get any employment. And we don't have the guts to stand up and do battle on behalf of these youngsters, something that Terry Gary was talking about.
Yeah,
I know we're close to wrap up, Mr.
Yeah, we got a minute left, and tomorrow don't forget to tune in to Black Focus 2 with Mr. Ron Edwards at 3 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio.
He's talking about Bin Laden.
Bin Laden. And then at 5 p.m. tomorrow, tune in to, if you live in Minneapolis, tune in Channel 17, Minneapolis Television Network, for Black Focus with Mr. Ron Edwards and your topic.
Bin Laden.
Bin Laden again. Okay.
Too heavy program. Mm-hmm.
And don't forget to read the Independent Business News Network, IBNNnews.com, and Black Politics in Minneapolis. All online, all free, And this week on the Independent Business News Network, I've started a citizen's journalism. One of the first articles that are going to come out is Chief Dolan's failure to discipline CRA sustained cases. And the second one, civilian review authority meetings exhibit unprincipled conduct. And that's part of their ongoing citizen journalism, real citizen journalism. Again, thank you for listening to On Point. We'll be back next week at 4 p.m. Thank you, Mr. Edwards in Studio A. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
And I will talk to you.
All right.